At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Coming up on the program today, we go grocery shopping in Houston, trying to pick up a sense of the national economic mood. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Wednesday today, the 22nd of November. Good as always to have you along, everybody. We do data and government statistics and experts and analysts when we have to. Today, though, we are going all anecdotal because for all the headlines and big picture stories, there are 330 million people in this economy, each of whom experiences things just a little bit differently. So our own Elizabeth Trovall spent her day at what I'm sure were super crowded supermarkets in and around Houston, trying to get a sense of the mood that American consumers are in this holiday season.
I'm at the HEB supermarket in Southwest Houston, where I catch Sarah Harris on her way to her car. She was shopping for ingredients for mac and cheese and green bean casserole, which she says were cheaper last year when she wasn't shopping last minute.
I had to get bigger things or get different brands than I normally would because everything's like sold out.
With a 12-week-old at home and no raise at her accounting job, she's really having to stretch her budget.
I feel like the economy is in a terrible state. Like everything is more expensive than it needs to be. So being the first-time mom, first time around holidays with the baby, plus having to cook, it's just like I need a break.
Out in the HEB parking lot, Todd Neal loads $200 or so of groceries in his truck. The priciest item in his cart today?
The brisket that I bought.
Which set him back $80, probably more than he would have paid last year, since beef prices are up 9%, according to the USDA. And while Neil, who works in real estate, does find prices to be inflated, he says,
My business is good. Overall, the Houston economy is still strong.
Just a few minutes down the road, I pull up to a Walmart to see how shoppers are faring there. In the parking lot, I catch Sharon S., who is cooking turkey wings for her family this year.
Turkey wings have really went up a lot. You get two, three in a pack now. And one I got was $10.57 with just two in there.
She says she had to cut back on portions.
But I wasn't able to get the what I really, you know, really wanted to get. So it's fine. We have a meal, so it's fine.
Also here is Iris Contreras, who in total has spent about $500 to host 50 people for Thanksgiving, even though she says she's doing well as an executive assistant.
Usually I try to buy like mid-range brand stuff, and now I see myself like buying the cheaper things, you know, maybe not the best quality, just because, yeah, prices are really expensive.
She doesn't usually shop at Walmart, but today she says it's offering the best bang for her buck. In Houston, I'm Elizabeth Trovall for Marketplace.
Wall Street on this Wednesday. You know, traders kind of phoned it in, actually. Off tomorrow, obviously half day on Friday. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Sticking with food and consumables in general, as any wine connoisseur will tell you, unless that bubbly you're maybe serving tomorrow actually came from that one specific region in France, it is just sparkling wine, right? Not champagne. Potato, potato, kinda, but unless you're the company or the very brand-sensitive region whence those products come, and then you're seeing knockoffs of plenty on store shelves, right? In that case, you definitely care about a rise in food fraud, which has in turn given rise to the business of anti-food fraud. Laura Riley wrote about it for the Washington Post. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Kai.
Talk to me about the forms that this fraud takes, would you?
Well, so first of all, it's big business. So this, we're talking $40 billion a year that it costs the food industry. And it is the fancy food categories, as one would expect. Mm-hmm. So it's caviar and the fancy cheeses and wine. I mean, everyone's seen those movies about wine fraud.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also the normal stuff. It's commodity row crops, conventional masquerading as organic. It's meat. It's just regular old grocery store fish. So from a consumer standpoint, especially if you are willing to pay a premium for a food that either is purportedly a higher quality,
right,
or that has better animal husbandry or some kind of, you know, ESG accolades, you know, you kind of want to know you're getting what you pay for.
So, yes to all of that. But look, if I go to Whole Foods or Gelson's or Dina De Luca, although I guess they closed, I don't even know what their deal is now, some upscale food store, right? And I pick what looks like, genuine Parmigiano Reggiano. How do I know it's the genuine article or if I'm being fleeced?
Yeah. So in the case of Parmesan, that's a really interesting one. So they just, it seemed a little performative, you know, it was kind of a stunt. They embedded edible microchips in the logo on those 50 pound wheels. Those, I mean, no one's going to buy a whole wheel themselves
unless you're
like completely nuts. But if you see the wheel with the logo on the side, somewhere in that logo is an edible microchip.
Wow.
I think it probably is inert, but it's just another way that these companies are saying to retailers and to the consumer, we're putting our money where our mouth is, and we are going to really stave off all of these imposters.
The companies obviously are doing this for economic self-preservation. What's the regulatory landscape here?
Well, in some ways, this is in anticipation of more traceability that is coming in as part of the Food Safety Modernization Act. So at the end of 2025, a lot of categories of food will have greater reportability requirements. Mm. So there'll be more kind of QR codes on things so that you can track back. There'll be things that are these little flexible tags on food that you can scan and really track the whole journey of that food from provenance to table, essentially, you know, in terms of the temperature it was kept mm-hmm. at, how long was it in a truck, you know, those kinds of things will be knowable.
Hmm. Let's get away from the high-end stuff and to the more mundane. You mentioned fish a minute ago. There was a line in this piece, seafood may be mislabeled as much as 25 to 70% of the time. That seems a lot.
Well, some of it's, okay, so you go out on long lining or whatever, and you get a lot of bycatch. And you want to use that bycatch. And if it's a fish that looks adjacent to the fish that you're catching, you're just going to put that in the mix. Sushi, I think, is notorious for having, because it's, you know, tiny little cross sections. You don't know what the average person has no idea what kind of fish is in that roll, right? So, you know, we're frequently eating things that are not what they are purported to be.
This actually goes to the safety of the food chain, and something like 25% of Americans report being very confident in the safety of the food supply. 25% of Americans being very confident is not a high percentage.
Indeed, it is not. Well, some of it is just there isn't good oversight. You know, we do not have the manpower to do really rigorous inspection of food at ports or in any context, really. So some of it is just we kind of shake our heads and hope that the food is what it's purported to be. And a lot of food is it's, you know, a fillet of fish on a little styrofoam tray. Yeah. Nothing could be more anonymous than that. Hmm.
Consumers will eventually pay the price for these, you know, edible microchips and labels and all the bells and whistles that are going to tell us where our food comes from, right?
Of course, it does get passed down, but I think it is a peace of mind thing. And certainly the intent is to root out some of the bad actors that are counterfeiting. You know, if you have edible holograms or invisible ink or serial numbers or those kinds of things on your cheese or your wine or honey, it will probably encourage some of the bad behavior to cease.
Laura Riley, food reporter of the Washington Post. Laura, thanks a lot. Fascinating piece.
Thanks so much, Kai.
Should you, for whatever reason, we shall not judge, miss something on the air, you can check out our podcast, the platform of your choice, of course, or marketplace.org. You decide. Okay, if you're listening with kids nearby, you might want to cover their ears for the next 15 or so seconds. I'm kidding. It's all going to be fine. But trade data don't lie. According to S&P Global Market Intelligence, imports of toys to the United States was down 32% year over year in the 3 months that ended in August, which is, of course, when a whole lot of holiday toys are ordered by wholesalers. So with that as a cautionary tale, we got Irene Kesselman on the phone. She's the owner of Alley Cat Toys, a retailer out in Carrboro, North Carolina.
We are going into our busiest time of the year, our most profitable time of the year. We are looking at staffing and, you know, making sure that we have the right merchandise and we have a sufficient amount. But we really don't bother with Black Friday. We leave that for the mass stores to do their thing. And then we come back and celebrate Small Business Saturday. We do promotions and giveaways. We wrap presents all day. And the next big event for us is Adult Shopping Night. After hours, we have our customers come in and have a night so they can shop peacefully without their kids. And it's just a quiet night, but it's a night in which we all have a great deal of fun. Many of our customers look very forward to that. Inflation definitely has made an impact in our store, as it has everybody. There's no denying that. But I do really try to have price points in our store so that one can come in, and if their budget is $10, we have plenty of items for $10 and under. And then, of course, we have items that go up over 100, especially at this time of year, where we will make an effort to bring in some more expensive things that we might not sell as frequently during the course of the year. We are in challenging times, not just retail, but other businesses as well. And I think what I need to do personally and as a store is just take it day by day and know that our very loyal customers will continue to support us this time of year, and we'll go from there.
Irene Kesselman of Alley Cat Toys, prepping for the holidays out in Carrboro, North Carolina. Not to get all bureaucratic on you, but the phrase you need to know for this next story is notice of proposed rulemaking. I know, it's terrible, very bureaucratic, but bear with me. This week, Jessica Rosenworcel, she's the chair of the Federal Communications Commission. She said that at its next meeting, the commission's going to vote on a notice of proposed rulemaking that would get rid of those early termination fees cable and satellite companies love to hit you with. You sign up for a TV package and then get locked in for months or years. Charging customers to quit early has been a key part of the cable TV business model, the bane of cord cutters, obviously, as well. If it passes, said notice of proposed rulemaking would have to be published in the Federal Register. There would be a period of public comment. And then, most likely, it would go into effect and hand another setback to a cable TV industry that is already faltering. Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino has that one.
For consumers stuck in a cable TV contract, finally getting to cancel whenever they want would be a big deal, says Ross Benish, a senior analyst at Insider Intelligence.
But it comes about 15 years too late.
Traditional paid TV, that includes cable and satellite services, has been losing subscribers every year for more than a decade as consumers make the switch to streaming.
you've gone from like, you know, it used to be like 70%+ of households would pay for a TV package, and now it's about half.
The reason some do stick with traditional cable is usually live events, especially sports, says Jamie Lumley, analyst with Third Bridge.
One of the big complaints when consumers think about the current streaming landscape is that they really have to get a lot of different services. There might be one game on Apple TV, another which is on their linear channel.
But with a cable bundle, he says, you can get it all in one place. That all-inclusive model might not be sustainable in a world where consumers can treat paid TV like they treat streaming platforms, says Jennifer Kent, vice president of research at Parks Associates.
You can sign up for a service and cancel at your leisure, which means that there are very high churn rates.
High as in 50% cancel those subscriptions over a year.
So you can imagine that the business challenge where half of your subscribers leave.
That could lead services to prioritize channels with trendy shows that draw subscribers, says Michael Pachter, managing director at Wedbush Securities. In a cable bundle, they help subsidize the less sexy, more niche content.
What sane human would subscribe directly to the Weather Channel, right? You won't.
And without customers locked into paying for it all the time, he says it might not be around on the next rainy day when they do want it. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
Coming up.
It sounds easy. It's not. I can't do it.
Never is. First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials up 184 points today, 0.5%, 35,273. NASDAQ added 65 points, close to 0.5%, 14,265. The S&P 500 tacked on 18 points, 0.4%, 45.56. Deere, it of the big green tractor fame, sliced off 3.1% today. That happened on the heels of the Moline, Illinois company issuing some bummer guidance for FY24. Elsewhere in the heavy metal space, Caterpillar of Irving, Texas, down 1.3%. Checking retail stocks, I mean, you know, Black Friday, right? Target dropped 0.25%. Walmart down 0.75%. Home Depot went the other way, up about 1.25%. AAA says it's expecting more than 55 million people to be traveling during the Thanksgiving holiday period. Checking travel-related companies thus on Wall Street. United Airlines added 0.9% today. Delta Airlines found 0.2%. Cruising, your thing. Carnival boosted 1.9%. Norwegian found about 0.3% today. Bond prices went up. That means the yield went the other way, 4.41%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Ascensus, helping people dream bigger, aim higher, and save more with financial confidence. Unleash the power of your retirement savings plan with innovative technology that makes things easy, top-notch service from experts who care, and flexible solutions that can grow with you. For more than 40 years, Ascensus has been helping savers achieve their goals. We can help you achieve yours, too. Learn more at ascensus.com. That's ASCENSUS.com.
And now a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns. Meaning, when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line, and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again. Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. OPEC has decided it's going to take the weekend off. OPEC Plus, technically, the original cartel, plus Russia and a couple of others, had a meeting scheduled for this weekend to talk production quotas, keep on cutting them, most likely, to try to stop the sliding crude that we've seen the past couple of months. The meeting's going to be next Thursday now, but the challenge for the group isn't going to be any better by then, because there is no small amount of internal disagreement about whether to keep the cuts going and by how much. Marketplace's Henry Epp explains why it's pretty tricky, actually, to read the oil supply and demand tea leaves right now.
A lot of OPEC countries would really like it if the price of oil was a bit higher. The main reason it's been relatively low recently, says Ellen R. Wald at the Atlantic Council.
There's too much supply and not enough demand.
So OPEC is considering more supply cuts, assuming
that if they can decrease supply, that will help push oil prices up.
The problem for them is there are a lot of non-OPEC oil producers who aren't cutting supply, says Mark Finley, a fellow at Rice University's Baker Institute for Public Policy. In fact, some have been expanding production, like the U.S. and
places like Guyana, Brazil, Canada.
Finley says some of that's due to past investment decisions around oil production, which are only now coming online.
Decisions that were made several years ago when prices were much higher.
All that means that even if OPEC cuts production further, we could still see a surplus of oil next year, as the head of the International Energy Agency told Reuters this week. On the demand side, some analysts, including the IEA, have predicted continued growth. But Amy Myers Jaffe at New York University says that's no sure thing. For one, there's questions about China, which she says has been stockpiling oil.
Now we're getting to this tricky period. Where is China's economy recovering or not? Because if it's not recovering, they have an awful lot of inventory.
And elsewhere in the world,
interest rates are high, and a lot of economies have high debt and headwinds. And so I think the jury is really out on this optimistic view of demand for 2024.
Jaffe does say that if demand for oil fails to catch up to supply, gas prices might keep coming down next year. I'm Henry Epp for Marketplace.
This being the season of online shopping, there's a decent chance you've been asked of late, probably repeatedly actually, to verify that you're a human by identifying a bunch of pictures with, say, bicycles or traffic lights or crosswalks in them. Those annoying little puzzles, let's just say it, they're annoying. They're called CAPTCHAs, which stands for Completely Automated Public Turing Test to Tell Computers and Humans Apart. Anyway, an article about them in The Atlantic caught my eye the other day because it points out that there might actually be more going on with CAPTCHAs than the puzzle that you see at first glance. Justin Pott had the story. Justin, it's good to have you on.
Good to be here, Kai.
Used to be back in the day, and look, these things have been around for 20-something years, I think you're right. It was just a bunch of letters, maybe in a different font or capitals and sort of tricky things that you would have to figure out. And now it is different because why?
Basically because computers got better at solving them. Initially, those letters that you were identifying were actually little excerpts from books that, so Google owns one of the biggest companies in this field, which is called ReCAPTCHA. And they found little bits of text that a computer struggled to figure out which letters they were. And they would be fed in the CAPTCHA. And this had two purposes. It would help identify you as a human, and it would also help the AI learn how to identify letters better. It got better and better at it to the point where the humans weren't needed anymore. And that made it no longer work to detect who was human. So they had to pivot to images. And now the images are starting to not work too.
Well, say more about that, right? Because we've all heard about AI and it's getting smarter. And there's a version of AI that can basically see now, as you say in this piece. So it's not going to be too long before AI can, you know, see which of those nine squares has a, you know, traffic light in it. And then what happens?
I mean, you just have to keep thinking of new systems to check. Right now, there is one company that has people rotating frogs for reasons I can't fully understand, but they say they've iterated against the AI, and for whatever reason, the AI struggles with that. Maybe that will be solved later.
Rotating frogs. We should be clear here. You have to align the frog with the direction the arrow is pointing, right?
There's an arrow on the screen to the left, and there's a three-dimensional image of a frog to the other side, and you're supposed to rotate it so that it's facing the direction of the arrow. It sounds easy. It's not. I can't do it.
I love that you were stumped by this one. That made me chuckle. you mentioned a company. There is business opportunity in CAPTCHA, yes?
Yeah, it's a big business. Google kind of dominates it, like I said before, but there's a few businesses that offer kind of different kinds of products. Google's kind of interesting because they're less and less focused on the CAPTCHA, and they're just kind of monitoring what you do on a website to try to identify how you're behaving, and they kind of use that to judge whether, not if you're human or not, actually. A company representative told me they're more interested in what it is you're trying to do. And if you're acting in a way that seems suspicious, then the CAPTCHA shows up. But otherwise, sometimes you see the caption, it's just a checkbox and it says, all good, you're human.
Right.
That's what's happening there. They've been watching you.
Well, that's slightly terrifying.
It's slightly terrifying. And some people don't like that from a security standpoint. There's another company called HCAPTCHA, and they offer a similar CAPTCHA service, but they don't do the tracking. Part of their whole thing is the privacy angle. So there's that. But there's also a big opportunity as the AI gets better. If someone can think of another way to identify who and isn't human, there could be a big business opportunity there.
This is a bit grand for the topic at hand, but
sure.
I think it's reasonable. This is kind of what it means to be human, right? Because that's what we're trying to demonstrate to the computers when we click on those freaking traffic lights in the nine grids.
Yeah, and that's why I encourage people, instead of getting frustrated when new variations of the CAPTCHA come up, to maybe pay attention a little bit and think about what this says about what it means to be human. I for one, don't know what rotating a frog says about what it means to be human, but there's clearly something there because smart engineers have spent a lot of time determining that this is something we're good at.
Justin Pott, writing about CAPTCHAs, and lots more, actually, if you read the subtext of this piece, in The Atlantic. Justin, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Kai. This was so much fun.
This final note on the way out today, in which online spending, at least, is doing just fine so far this holiday season. Saw this in Fast Company, some data from Adobe that says in the first 20 days of the holiday shopping season, that's November 1st through November 20th, we've already spent, cumulatively, more than $63 billion online. That is a 5% bump from last year. All right, we got to go. Here is your moment of economic context, which, yeah, we told you yesterday about Binance, for now anyway, the biggest cryptocurrency exchange in the world, and how both the company and its CEO and founder have pleaded guilty to federal criminal charges. Anyway, in the 24 hours since that announcement, users have pulled a cool $1 billion from that platform. Our media production team includes Brian Allison, Jake Cherry, Justin Dueler, Drew Jostad, Gary O'Keefe, Jeff Peters, Charlton Thorpe, Juan Carlos Torrado, and Becca Weinman. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. And if you're off, by the way, enjoy yourself. If you're working, thank you. is APM.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.